Hey, thank you so much for checking out another killer episode of the Radio Cheddar Podcast, joined by Jeff Tate, talking all about the 30th anniversary of Queensryche's classic Operation Mindcrime, which he's doing in its entirety on his current tour. We talk about his best memories recording this classic concept album.
Oh, gosh, there's a lot of them. You know, we recorded the album in, the United States and Canada and Europe. So it was a multi-studio recording.
We discussed if they ever thought about making Operation Mindcrime into a movie and the possibility of a Broadway run. Plus, he talks about Ronnie James Dio, who was part of Operation Mindcrime too. And Jeff gives us his thoughts about RJD 8 years after his passing.
Well, Ronnie was what I would call a mentor, you know, to my career, and a wonderful man.
We got to get in some motorcycle stories with Jeff. We talk about that, his keys to success, and a ton more today. Jeff Tate is my guest on Radio Cheddar.
From Detroit Rock City.
Detroit Rock City.
This is the Radio Cheddar Podcast. Here's your host, Meltdown.
As always, a heartfelt thank you for listening to the Radio Cheddar Podcast. I know the podcast world has been inundated with all sorts of crappy podcasts, and the fact that you choose to listen to this crappy one, I thank you very much. Of course, crappy only in the part of the host. As far as the guests are concerned, they're always awesome. Like today, Jeff Tate, who I think is going to be setting a record for most appearances on the Radio Cheddar Podcast. This is his third. The last two times we talked to him about the second and third installment of his latest trilogy, as far as the solo stuff is concerned. And today we go back to a concept album, which is really one of the best. I mean, Operation Mindcrime. What more needs to be said about that classic album? Turns 30 years old this year. He's out on tour right now, doing it live in its entirety. And if you're in the Southeast Michigan area, coming to the Machine Shop in Flint on June 23rd to do it live. But we talked about that. Talked about Ronnie James Dio, motorcycle stories, keys to his success, lots of stuff with Jeff Tate. It seems like each time I talk to Jeff, I build a little bit more of a rapport with him, and each interview gets better and better. So I think this one's really stellar. So hope you guys dig it as much as I enjoyed doing it. It's Jeff Tate today on Radio Cheddar. Hey, thanks for calling in and taking out the time here to talk with us, Jeff. Appreciate it.
No problem. Glad to talk to you again.
Yeah, coming up June 23rd at the Machine Shop, and of course all over the place doing Operation Mindcrime, which just turned 30 years old earlier in the month here. Man, it's crazy to think.
I know, May, it came out 30 years ago. It's hard to believe, huh?
Yeah. I was thinking about this earlier before I was talking to you. Was this one of those records that you kind of had the thought process in mind long before the record, before you wrote the record, or was one of those things that after the first two albums you kind of put this together?
Yeah, I've been wanting to do a full-scale concept record from the beginning of the band's career, really. Just didn't have the subject matter. Had the want and the desire to create something, you know, on a large scale. And it wasn't until 1986, when I was living in Montreal, that the idea came to me. And then once I, you know, came up with the storyline and then wrote a couple of the tracks, presented them to the band, everybody loved the idea, and we started working on what would become, you know, probably one of our most recognizable albums, you know, and it still astounds me to this day that, you know, I can show up anywhere in the world and play one of the songs off that record and people immediately know it. You know, it's great.
Yeah, it's such a great album. And then, of course, you know, a couple years later, I should say, I think maybe 5 years later or something, you guys put out Empire, which was like a monstrous album. And I think at that time, it kind of put you guys more in the spotlight with the general public and gave you a chance to kind of revisit that and do the entire thing in its entirety. Is that how it worked?
Yeah, kind of very much like that, yeah.
Yeah, and it kind of give it another new a rebirth, so to speak, after a few years of making the record.
Yeah, well, you know, it's been my experience that audiences typically like what they know, you know, if they're familiar with a song or an album, they really love hearing it live. They don't have a lot of patience for new material, although they'll give it a shot, you know, but it isn't for you know, a couple of years it takes for people to really embrace an album, I think.
Yeah, and Operation Mindcrime is, you know, in this day and age with downloading and, you know, Spotify and all this other nonsense, you just can't, like, it's just not the same to listen to it, you know, different parts here and there. You got to listen to the whole thing all the way through, you know?
Yeah, well, that's how it was designed, you know, it was designed way before
right.
The idea of file sharing and that kind of thing. Yeah, it was but it was one of the first five, I believe, one of the first five digital albums recorded.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, it was brand new at the time. In fact, when we made it, we were very excited about using all this new digital technology. And then we finished the album and we played it for the record company, and they were cringing because of the sound. And, you know, it was kind of strange for me because I thought, well, I'm so used to it now, you know. But at the time, people weren't used to hearing digital recordings. They sounded harsh and brittle to them, you know. They were used to that warm, fuzzy, analog kind of sound. And this was hard and, I mean, just brutal, you know, which we felt fit the music really well. But EMI, they had a different idea at the time.
as record labels do sometimes. But yeah. That's interesting. But yeah, it's like nowadays, you know, what, like we were talking about, I think more, I mean, even though there's not a lot of concept albums that are coming out now, bands painstakingly, some of them anyways, put songs in a certain order for people to listen to it in a certain way, and it never really seems to be listened to that way anymore.
No, in fact, even albums that were written that way on purpose, you know, with the running order being a certain way, if you download the album now, like on iTunes or something like that, iTunes puts it out of order, you know, which is so frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's why I've reverted back to vinyl. It's like I'm just done with it.
A lot of people are. Yeah, a lot of people are. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. Hey, I want to ask you about something. This might be like a really stupid question, but that whole thing in the beginning of the record, you know, Dr. Davis, telephone please, Dr. Davis, that whole thing, that's also in Motley Crue's TNT. Where did that clip come from?
Oh, gosh. It came from a hospital in, where was it? Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, something like that.
Really? Well, how did you guys own that? How did Motley Crue put it on TNT before Dr. Feelgood as well?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that all happened. I've heard it used a number of places in commercials. I've heard it used in ads and things. I just figured, you know, somebody recorded it and passed it around and it became kind of a thing, you know. It's kind of a mystery.
Yeah, I thought it was from like some movie I'd never seen or heard of or something. But you guys just taped it yourself?
Yeah, somebody did. I didn't, but somebody did. Yeah.
Yeah. What are your best memories recording this album?
Oh, gosh, there's a lot of them. You know, we recorded the album in, let's see, the United States and Canada and Europe. So it was a multi-studio recording. We used an amazing production team. Peter Collins and James Barton were our primary production team members. And Paul Northfield also helped us on it as well. There was a guy named Dave Ogilvie who was involved as a second engineer who went on to produce Nine Inch Nails and a lot of industrial sort of music. Gosh, it was a fun record to make in that once everybody got on board with the project and kind of understood what it was, everybody really contributed wonderful performances, you know, for it. And, you know, it lives on. It's one of those records that's timeless. The subject matter is very timeless. You listen to it and it sounds like the band is speaking of, you know, the present situation that's happening in America. It's weird in the way that it lines up with what's happening, you know, now.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that as you were talking about that. That's true. Was this an easy record to put together? Did it come together simply, or was it something that was painstakingly and you kind of had to put pieces together here and there?
Well, it was painstakingly kind of a methodology that went around it into the record. There's a lot of details, like, for instance, that opening scene where, you know, the nurse walks into the room and, you know, we had to envision what the room was, the room size, and then match the echoes and the reverbs to the room and what it would be like. And so she's walking across the room and we wanted to give it, you know, a sense of realism. You know, so we put footsteps, you know, her footsteps walking across the room. And there was a, there were details like, well, how many footsteps would it take, you know, for you to get from the door to where Nikki, the patient, was laid out? And, you know, details like that we were discussing and talking about and trying to plan for to make it as realistic as possible.
And then with the end, I remember now. I love that. I just always thought that was the coolest thing. Man,
that was... that's a really good, that's a good interpretation of that. That's well done.
Well, I do stuff with my voice for a living, so I don't know, but yeah.
You kind of sound like that. You kind of sound like that guy.
That guy. Man, all these years later, a compliment, I guess, from Jeff Tate. We'll see what happens. But somebody asked me if you ever thought of making it into a movie. Was there ever talks about that?
Oh, so many talks. Yeah, so many different production companies have tried to make this into a film. Some really famous directors have been involved. It just keeps coming up to the same issue, is financing. The last time it got almost made into a movie was around 2009, when the whole financial crisis hit the world.
Oh, really?
all the major investors for the film bailed out or lost their money. So back to the drawing board. But right now, kind of an interesting thing is there's a Broadway version of Operation Mindcrime that's being done right now. It isn't out yet. It's being put together. The production's being put together. So you might see it on Broadway before we see it in a film. But, you know, you never know with this piece of work.
Wow, that is so cool.
It has a life of its own, and it keeps going.
Yeah, that's amazing. You know, I know that American Idiot from Green Day is put out on Broadway, and I thought that was a pretty fantastic record as well. And so you're saying that at its 20th anniversary, there was kind of people talking about possibly putting this into a movie or something, huh?
Oh, yeah. They've been talking about it for years. Actually, since the album came out, it's been talked about, you know, from various sources and various production companies. And it's a crazy story. And someday it'll probably be told in a book, you know, about all the different productions this album is inspired.
Now, as far as the Broadway thing is concerned, are you going to have any play in it? Like, I mean, not be in it or nothing, but I mean, any part of the process of producing it or whatever?
Yeah, I'm part of the process. Yeah, right now it's a thing. I never try to get my hopes up on these kind of things because I've seen it come up against the wall so many times. You know, but I'm involved with it, and we'll kind of cross our fingers and see what happens.
You seem like the kind of guy, and I don't know you, you know, very well or whatever, but you seem like the kind of guy that you have this vision in your head, and that's what you want portrayed on that stage or that screen or whatever.
Yeah, it depends on what it is, yeah, but what I'm working on. But yeah, typically I have a vision of what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
I have a game plan.
Yeah, like most, I suppose. You know, I was supposed to talk to you a couple weeks ago, and it was the eighth year of Ronnie James Dio's passing, and he was, of course, part of Operation Mindcrime 2. Talk a little bit about, you know, your thoughts about Ronnie.
Well, Ronnie was what I would call a mentor, you know, to my career, and a wonderful man. He was, I believe, the first tour. He invited us on our first European tour that the band Queensryche was ever part of, and treated us incredibly well, gave me the opportunity to contribute to the Stars album that he did in 85. Toured with him a number of times. In fact, was on Queensryche was a special guest on the last tour that he did with Heaven and Hell. And he was a great guy. I can't say enough wonderful things about Ronnie Dio. He was truly a gentleman in a tough industry, you know, always treated people with respect, and always had a kind word to say about people. Even if he didn't like somebody, he wouldn't let you know that he didn't like them, you know, which was really a talent.
Yeah.
He had one really great talent that I'll never forget. He was a superstar, you know, really well known, and respected, musician. And but he never made anyone feel like they were inferior, you know, when they were around him. He was very welcoming and very down to earth. And he always made you feel like you knew him, you know, and that, you were on the same level and you were, you know, you could communicate. He just made people feel welcome, which was really a talent.
Yeah. I only met him once, and I think it was in 94 or something along those lines. And you hit the nail right on the head. I walked on the bus with one of my friends who had recorded some stuff with him, and she kind of knew him and whatnot. And you're right. He actually hugged me when I left after 20 minutes and thanked me for coming. It's like, I was nobody. It's like, and that's just the kind of guy I guess he was. So.
Yep, he was a hugger.
Yeah. And he's one of the few guys, I'm 5'6", he's one of the few guys in this business that's shorter than me, so. That was always something. But hey, what kind of challenges are you looking at, you know, now 59 years old, doing Operation Mindcrime in its entirety? And I see that you don't have many days off. Does that play havoc on your voice at all?
No, I do that on purpose. I don't like days off. I like to keep going. And, you know, I started this tour in January in Europe, and, still going, still feeling strong. I feel really comfortable, you know, singing this material, and, I feel really confident and strong. I don't know if I'll be around and be able to do it, you know, at 70 years old when the 40 year anniversary comes out. So this might be the last time I do this. And so I think about that every night before I go on the stage. I think, you know, this might be the last time I sing this song or play this, you know, this album here in Flint, Michigan, you know? So I'm going to make the best of it, and I'm going to do my best, and I'm going to enjoy it. You know, I make a conscious decision of that each night because, you know, you just don't know. I mean, at 70 years old, you know, things are different, you know, physically. And you wonder how you can still do it. But, you know, you got people like Mick Jagger who are in their 70s who still just kick ass, you know.
Right. And I'm not a singer or nothing, but I mean, I would think that Rolling Stone songs are a little bit easier to perform live for a singer than what you do. That's just my guess. Is that my close or no?
Yeah, I could definitely say that with confidence, that my stuff is definitely more strenuous and athletic, you know, as far as singing goes. But, you know, I'm not dancing and moving like Mick Jagger all over the stage.
I was just going to ask you if you're going to start that. I don't think that'd be, you know, I got to be honest. I told you before that I saw that Empire tour and you guys did the whole album in its entirety. And at the time, and even still to this day, it's one of the most memorable concerts I ever attended. It was visually and just sonically impressive, you know?
Yeah, we put a lot into that show, and it was a real pleasure to play that. And a dream come true, for me at least, because at that time, until that tour, we had never been able to play the Operation Mindcrime album in its entirety as it was meant to be played. You know, we could only play certain tracks from it. So, because we were an opening act, you know, and the Empire Tour was our first headlining tour. So we said, oh, this is our first headlining tour. We're going to do what we want to do. We're
right.
going to play all of Operation Mindcrime. <You know? laughs>
Well, that's why I said Empire became such a big hit. It kind of afforded you the chance to kind of go back and revisit your stuff for people that maybe only knew you from Empire, from Silent City, or whatever the case is, you know?
Oh, yeah. I can remember vividly playing the whole Operation Mindcrime album on that tour, and people in the front row looking around at each other going, what the heck is this? You know, where's Silent Lucidity? That's what I came to see.
God, that was such a big song for you guys. It's such a Empire is such a great album. I got to get that on vinyl. I think I told you that last time. I got to see if I can find that somewhere.
Oh, you know, I have it on vinyl, and it sounds amazing on vinyl.
I bet really it does. Good. I bet it does. Well, hey, I want to switch gears here with you for just a few minutes, and we'll cut you loose. But last time I talked to you, I think you were planning this Harley ride in, like, Asia or something. Have you done that?
I did one part of it, yeah, from Singapore into Malaysia. That was really fun, except for the bugs. There's a lot of bugs.
I can imagine.
You know? Yeah, I didn't really imagine that at the time, but I guess I should have, because it's a tropical environment. You know, I mean, you're riding through all these, hundreds and hundreds of miles of banana plantations, you know, and there's just bugs everywhere. But it was a wonderful experience, and, you know, I like going to different places and riding and playing. Another one, go up through the St. Lawrence River up through Quebec.
Oh, yeah.
I'm planning on doing that in September. I think it's September.
Nice, man. You get out and get to riding, man. I'm so jealous. I wish I could do that. It's awesome.
Oh, you should. Just make the time.
Yeah.
That's what it takes. Just make the time,
Yeah, with working kids. But, I got my Harley out today. And, of course, the weather finally broke here in Detroit. I think there's still a little bit of snow around. But but it was a brutal winter out here. And I missed riding for sure. But, I was thinking about you about that ride. And you were so excited to go on that thing.
Yeah, well, I love riding. And I love going to different places and riding. And my friend is setting up this one. It's on the Gaspé Peninsula, I think it's called. Yeah, it's all the way from Montreal to the end of Quebec, which is way up north, and it's supposed to be some incredible countryside and great roads. So I'm psyched about that.
Yeah, that sounds great, man. I'll tell you, there's nothing like finding a nice piece of road to just ride and kind of just forget about everything.
Yeah, until something goes wrong with the bike.
Well, I guess that does happen from time to time. But last time I talked to you, I told you I went down this Yes rabbit hole, and I couldn't get out of it. I'm still kind of in it. But you said that Close to the Edge was your favorite album, so I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go revisit that one. I'll tell you what, that second side of Close to the Edge, I mean, that is to me, that's almost like a perfect album side.
Oh, it's amazing. Is it? Was it? And You and I,
yep.
And Siberian Katru.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing.
God.
It's amazing.
And You and I remember listening to that as a kid growing up in Buffalo. They'd play it like in the middle of the night on the radio or something. And I started to flash it back like, oh, this is awesome.
I'm glad you revisited that. That's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah, now that I got back into vinyl, I got to buy all this stuff, and you turned me on to Yes, and I started going through it, and I started buying all of it. Now they got their 50th anniversary tour, I think, is coming up this summer, right?
Yeah, I think so. I want to see them. I haven't seen them in a while, so I'm trying to see all my favorite bands and artists before they're gone.
Right.
And I'm trying to make a point of it. I'm going to see the Doobie Brothers and Steely Dan. Yeah, in a month they're playing in my area, so I'm really excited about that.
God, Steely Dan is another one I've just kind of recently fallen in love with all over again in the last year. The music's so great.
Really good and very varied. Like, each album is very different from the last, you know. Hey, I got a quick story for you.
Sure.
Talking about motorcycle riding.
Yeah.
So I was it last year? Yeah, last year, a friend of mine contacted me and said, hey, me and a couple of my buddies were riding out to Sturgis. Would you be interested in going? I said, well, yeah, I better get, when are you leaving? And he told me the date. It was like a week and a half, before they were leaving. And I hadn't ridden my bike in a while. And I went out to the garage and started it up and rode it down the street, and it broke down. Right.
Oh, really? Well, wait, back up for 1 second. So what year is your bike? Like, what kind of bike do you have?
Oh, it's a 2001 Fat Boy.
Okay.
So I got to take it into a shop. Well, my buddy has a shop. And so he says, well, bring it down and we'll get it fixed up. No problem. So I go down there, I take it down there, and they can't get the part. And so I'm out of luck. But my buddy's brother, Jim, he says, hey, I can't go to Sturgis this year. Take my bike. And I said, really? You want me to take your bike? That's pretty personal. He goes, I don't mind. Just do me one favor. When you go there, get me one of those spray-on decals, that they do, for the event, mm-hmm. That says Sturgis and, the year. I said, oh, no problem. So he gives me his bike, and we take off, and we go, and there's five of us. And we're taking across the mountain passes. It's a pretty long ride from, Seattle to Sturgis.
But probably a beautiful ride.
Oh, it is really, really beautiful.
Yeah.
But we get out and we're rolling, and one of the bikes breaks down. So we have to pull over the side of the road. And there's five bikes pulled over the side of the road, and they're trying to fix one of the bikes. And all these guys are like mechanics, and they know what they're doing, and they can fix stuff on the fly. So all the tool bags come out. and they're setting their stuff out on top of the bike seats, and every one of them has this roll that they roll out. And you know what? They're all carrying like multiple handguns. I'm going, what the heck's going on? Everybody has like multiple handguns, and I have none. You know?
You probably felt safe, though.
Well, yeah, I felt like really, really safe.
Yeah, that, you tell me about that Sturgis, man. That's awesome. I got to get out there sometime. You know, it's just between life and everything. I just haven't had a chance to. But the kids are getting a little bit older, so hopefully soon, you know?
Yeah, you know, all my kids are grown up now, so I've got a lot more, you know, free time and less responsibility in that area. Because I remember as a father with all my kids growing up, yeah, you're really constrained on your time because you had a lot of family time to spend, you know. You're responsible for those kids getting raised right, and you can't go taking off like you're a kid, you know.
Right? Yeah. Exactly.
But
yeah.
When you're a grandpa, you can do that kind of stuff.
And you can even send your grandkids back there after, you know, drinking mountains of Mountain Dew or whatever it is. So.
That's right. Back to mom.
Yeah, right. Hey, a final thing here for you, Jeff, and we'll cut you loose. I've been asking people this all year long, and I get a different response. What are the keys to your success in this business? You've been at it a long time. What do you think you can attribute it to?
Probably tenacity, you know, just sticking with it and, having the ability to enjoy what you do. You know, recognize it and try to keep that in the back of your mind with every move you make, with every event that you attend, every concert that you give. Try to retain some gratitude, you know, and feel and really honestly recognize that you're in a special place and be grateful for it.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, June 23rd at the Machine Shop in Flint, Michigan is where I'm going to be coming up playing the entire Operation Mindcrime. The next day, by the way, I'm a co-captain of the Bob Probert Memorial Motorcycle Ride. Do you know who Bob Probert was?
No, I don't.
He was he played for the Red Wings and the Chicago Blackhawks, and he passed away. I want to say he was around 45 or something of a heart condition. And we got I'm going to be co-riding this with Scott Parker, who's a former NHL player as well. We get about, I don't know, 1,600 bikes. So if you're interested in a ride through Windsor, Canada on June 24th, just let me know. But I'm sure you got to be traveling down the highway there. But I'm going to be doing that ride, and riding through Windsor is really nice. A lot of great great open roads out there, and probably no banana bugs or whatever they are.
Good. Yeah, I can't make that ride, but man, I'm really happy for you. That sounds like a great time.
Yeah, it's we've done it a few years now, and I was honored enough that they're making me one of the ride leaders or something this year, and that's really cool. It's a bunch of great people over there. But hey, Jeff, safe travels. Thank you so much for the time as always, and we'll see you on the 23rd up in Flint.
All right, belt down. Take care, and thanks for the time on the air. Appreciate it. See you soon.
Yeah, if you can make the trek to Flint, Michigan on June 23rd to the world-famous Machine Shop, of course, tell Kevin I sent you. And then watch Jeff Tate perform the entire Operation Mindcrime album. I'll tell you what, I saw the tour like I was talking about when Empire came out. Of course, Empire was such a big record, it kind of afforded them the chance to go back and rediscover their catalog with some fans that were kind of new to the band. Same thing happened with Metallica, you know, when the Black Record came out. All of a sudden, fans started going back listening to And Justice and Ride the Lightning, Master of Puppets, that kind of thing. Same thing happened with the guys from Queensryche. And that record, Empire, was just a monstrous album at the beginning of the 1990s. But good stuff right there from Jeff Tate. If you're listening to this anywhere where he's going to be making a stop near you, Jeff Tate's a perfectionist, man. This guy would not do this if he didn't think he could pull it off to the peak performance of his capabilities. So it's bound to be an awesome watch and an awesome listen as well. Hey, you got some great interviews lined up for this week as far as the Radio Chatter podcast is concerned. And don't forget, next week, Bert Kreischer. I already did that interview, and it's a good one, man. It's really funny. Bert's a super interesting guy. You might remember him from The Machine, where he's, you know, taken over by the Russian mafia and stuff. That's like one of his, it's like his Stairway to Heaven joke. If you've never heard of The Machine and Bert Kreischer, definitely Google that. It's a good 10 or 12 minute listen and watch as well. The dude like does his comedy without his shirt on. I told him he reminds me of Randy from the Trailer Park Boys. Anyways, as always, thanks for listening. A quick follow on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, whatever will be appreciated, at Meltdown WRIF. Even leave a voicemail if you're so inclined. You know, 248-586-2988. Leave a voicemail with, you know, questions, concerns, concerts you've seen, music you've dug. I might use it in an upcoming episode of the Radio Chatter Podcast. But as always, thank you so much for listening.